It's now time for the Wallops and Assateague Island Report, sponsored by Orbital Science Corporation and Midway Chevy, Cadillac, Buick, and Toyota of Pocomoke. Here's your host, Robin Rothschild.
And hello, I'm Robin. Welcome to the Wallops and Assateague Island Report. I do believe I have Keith Kohler on the line. He is Public Relations Specialist with NASA at Wallops Island. Hey, Keith, you there? Keith?
Hello?
Hey, we got you. Boy, you got to love it. Modern technology.
That's right.
So I do have Keith Kohler. He's a public relations specialist with NASA at Wallops Island. Keith, how you doing today?
Pretty good, I guess.
You're still standing, right?
Yeah, we're still standing. Yeah, it's a little busy getting ready for the big launch. So, yeah.
Well, you know what? I want to, we're going to talk about the launch coming up, but I first want to ask, how was your Wallops Moon Mission celebration last week?
Oh, yeah. At the Visitor Center was a really great turnout. We had over 800 people for the day, with 500 of those coming in the evening. Great response back to kids. You know, had a really good time. And of course, we had the support, you know, from local area groups, the Delmarva Discovery Center, the Sussex County Astronomy Society came in, and we had folks from over at the Chincoteague Refuge, I think, came out. So, you know, with everybody there, I mean, we just all had a great time, and everybody learned a lot about the moon and the upcoming mission.
That's a great turnout, 800 people. Fantastic, Keith.
Oh, yeah, they all had a good time, yeah.
Well, this is a big deal for our area. This is, it's the first time Wallops is launching something to study the moon, correct?
Yeah, it's actually our first launch beyond Earth orbit, so, you know, we're excited about that. We've done satellites dating back to 1960 for Earth's orbit, but this is the first time going beyond that, so, you know, we're excited about that. And then it's also, you know, the first launch of the rocket that's being used, which is the Air Force Minotaur 5 rocket. Once you count, you know, just the idea of NASA going back to the moon. The spacecraft itself was developed out at Ames Research Center in California. Goddard Space Flight Center in Greenbelt, Maryland has a laser technology communication experiment on board that they'll be doing. There's just a lot of new innovative items going on with this mission.
You know, I'm reading actually your press release, and it's a lot of firsts. And the reason that this is happening, this is an attempt to answer prevailing questions about our moon.
Yeah, they've learned, you know, over the years, especially going all the way back to the Apollo days in the 60s, was things were noticed by the astronauts about the atmosphere of the moon. And of course, even when, you know, there was a big debate as what was going to happen when the, you know, astronauts first landed on the moon and they stepped out, where they're going to sink and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So there really wasn't a whole lot known about the moon. And even today, we really don't know a lot about the atmosphere of the moon. So with this mission, that's one of the things we're trying to understand is we look at the moon from Earth, and, you know, we can see right to the surface, but there is an atmosphere. And so we're trying to learn a little bit more about that. And then that could be applied to other planetary systems that we go visit. So hoping to learn a lot about it.
Now, do they hope to learn, like here I'm reading that they want to determine whether dust is being lofted into the lunar sky.
Yeah, the Earth is bombarded all the time by meteorites, and so one thing that they're trying to look at is, you know, once, you know, something hits the surface of the moon, you know, where does that dust go that covers the moon? Does it, you know, rise up, and how far does it rise up? Where does it go? There are a whole lot of questions there about it, and that we really don't understand. There really hasn't been any studies of the atmosphere. So there's some key science, I think, involved with this mission and learning new things about it.
Now, Keith, what kind of equipment will the Minotaur 5 rocket have on it? What kind of testing equipment?
Well, the Minotaur 5, mainly is going to be carrying the Lattice spacecraft. I mean, that's pretty much it. And then we also have, you know, in addition to the moon instrumentation that's going to be studied, the Lattice also has, as I mentioned, the Goddard laser communication. So typically when we coordinate or communicate with satellites and things, we do it by radio frequencies, which is similar to what we use here on Earth. And
right.
So what we're looking to use is the idea of using laser for communications, and then you can transmit much higher data rates than we currently do, and do it quicker.
That's crazy.
And so this is an experiment to see, you know, can you do that from you know, far off, so to speak, and then how would we apply that as we get further out in space?
So, Keith, basically this is like a Star Trek type mission, you know, using lasers to communicate. That's amazing.
It's a new technology, and so, you know, we're excited, you know, about being able to do that. I mean, we've done laser communications have been done from satellite to satellite, and they've also, I think, been done from lower Earth orbit down to Earth, but we've never done anything this far out. So, yeah, it's kind of cool.
That's pretty exciting. I want to tell our listeners a little bit about the LADEE. It's a small, car-sized lunar atmosphere and dust environment explorer.
Correct.
And it's a robotic mission that will orbit the moon to gather detailed information. So, you know, what really surprised me, the LADEE, it doesn't seem like it really even weighs that much. It says the LADEE bus structure is made of a lightweight carbon composite with a mass of 547.2 pounds and 844.4 pounds when fully fueled. So, I mean, is that pretty lightweight?
That's pretty lightweight.
Yeah.
I mean, even some of the sounding rocket missions that we do here, the payloads weigh more than that. So yeah, it's a lightweight system that the folks at Ames developed. And in addition to that, the spacecraft is what they would call modular. So it's the idea of developing the major part of the spacecraft, all the supporting systems that are developed, and then you can adopt that to larger spacecraft or other spacecraft. So the idea is trying to develop this, you know, inexpensively. And to be able to do these types of missions and then be able to not reuse, but reuse the technology and the idea of the plug and basically a plug and play type thing. So you have a structure there and then you just, you know, add the instruments to it for what you want to fly.
Boy, this is the first time that the spacecraft like this is flying, correct?
Correct. Yeah, it's always done in-house at Ames. So it's the first time they've ever done a satellite from start to finish in-house. This small type satellite, this is the first of its type.
Boy, that's pretty cool. I mean, it's almost like Legos. It's kind of, you know, you can adapt it to whatever mission you need it for. That is really something.
Yeah, it's you know, I think this whole mission has a lot of innovative aspects to it in order to do it, and you know, inexpensively, and it was, you know, has been done really within 5 years. So for satellite time, putting together something together, including, you know, the whole mission and everything, this has been a fairly quick turnaround to put this whole thing together.
That seems very quick. How long will the LADEE be up in space?
I think I was just reading it this morning, and I forgot. I need more coffee. But it's basically it will orbit the Earth for, I think, for about 30 days, you know, basically kind of speeding up, you know, getting some speed as it goes around. And then it will go on up to the moon. And then there will be some checkout once it gets to the moon. They'll do the laser communications. And then I think there's a 60-day period where they'll actually be taking moon data. So I think the entire flight, you know, from beginning to end is something like 6 months.
Oh, wow. That's up there quite a bit.
Yes. For these types of missions, it's, you know, that's not much time. So
yeah.
So we'll hope to be able to get some really good data.
Now, we didn't say this. The mission is scheduled for Friday, September 6th. So that's next Friday, a week from this Friday.
Yeah, 11:20.
Yeah, it is coming close. And 11:27 p.m.
Correct.
So it's the nighttime.
It's the nighttime. And we only have 4 minutes to launch it in.
Oh, my God. That's the window?
The launch window is only 4 minutes the first night, and then the subsequent nights, the 7th through the 10th, are our backup launch days. And the window is a little bit longer. It's still the launch time is about the same time. It varies a little bit, but we have all the way up to 15 minutes on subsequent days. So our window of opportunity for launch is very small.
So now let me ask you a question. Why is that window only 4 minutes? What are the reasons behind that?
It's way beyond my capabilities in math, but it's you have to be able to line up and you know, and capture the moon at a certain point. It's, as I kind of envision it myself, it's kind of like, you know, a quarterback knows that if the receiver's going after a pass, that you know, he has to deliver the ball at this point in order for the receiver, you know, to get to that same point and catch it. So it's you know, we know we have to launch in this period in order to capture the moon at whatever time.
And so hit that spot.
We know the orbit of the moon, so we know we have this as much time we have to capture the orbit at that point, at the moon in that point in the orbit.
Actually, Keith, I think that's a very good analogy. And I did not realize that it was had to be so specific. Is do that with using the calculations, do they come up with that time, like 11:27 is, you know, in that 4 minutes, that's the time, and that's how you pick these launch times?
For this type of mission, yes, for the science missions. And even when we, you know, we're getting ready to do the space station missions out of here, flights with the Antares, Orbital Sciences Antares rocket to the space station, and it does the same thing. We know what the orbit of the space station, and they have to, you know, catch up with the space station. So, you know, based on the orbit of the space station determines when that actual launch is. So the same thing with the science missions, that determines, you know, when you're going to launch.
Right. So now let's talk about some of the other things you've got coming up. I mean, this is so exciting. I can't wait. I will be there. And,
well, one thing I do want to mention about LADEE is, you know, public viewing. People have been asking us where can they go to see it, and there are basically two spots for public viewing for the launch. One is Robert Reed Park on Chincoteague, downtown Chincoteague there, and then also Assateague. Will be closed, the south end of Assateague, for this launch for safety reasons to, you know, support the trajectory of the launch. So what they've decided to do, working with Chincoteague and the county and things, is that they've decided to, they're going to close off, I think, from the circle there at Chincoteague, Maddox Boulevard, all the way up to the gate entrance to Assateague. And so people can go there. And we'll be able to view the launch from right there on the road.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah, so they'll have some good viewing spots from there. And we'll have sound systems. We'll have NASA people there to answer questions. And so, you know, I hope it's a good experience, even though we've had to, you know, try to figure this out, how we're going to accommodate the crowds.
Mm-hmm.
But hopefully we have a good answer to that. We hope everybody has a good time. So, and the visitor center also is going to be closed to the public because we have close to 1,400 guests coming in for the launch, and so there's only so many that we can accommodate at the spot right across on the, you know, NASA property right. Across from the launch pad. So we're going to have to accommodate them at the visitor center. So that's the reason why we're going to have to close the visitor center unless we go, you know, further into the, you know, couple launch attempts, and then some of those crowds will thin out, and then we may be able to open it back up to people. But right now, that's kind of
so. Keith, having 1,400 visitors come in for this is a big deal.
It's a big deal. It's hard to find a hotel room on Chincoteague and even Pocomoke. I think people are you know, finding it hard to get a hotel room. So you know, so we expect all the hotels in the entire area to be filled for the weekend. So that's also helped out, being on the weekend, that, you know, people can come down and we'll be able to visit all the you know, things in the area. So, you know, while they're here, we're trying to let them know, hey, there's things to go visit, whether you're in, you know, Worcester or Wicomico or going to Ocean City or whatever, Yakima County. So we're trying to make sure everybody knows, you know, there are things to do here over the weekend while you're here.
Oh, absolutely. There's so much to do on Delmarva, period. I mean, you know what, Keith? I never even want to leave. People keep saying, you know, go to California. Why?
That's right.
There's so much going on here. Well, I'm just so excited about this. You know, I remember going to my first Minotaur launch, and you just can't even explain what it's like, especially because that first one, that was quite a few years ago, maybe four years ago.
Yeah.
And, you know, it had to be delayed a couple times. And, hey, you definitely want to make sure that you're giving it every perfect opportunity that you can give these rockets.
Once it's lit. You know,
no turning back.
You want to make sure you have it right before you light the fuse, so to speak.
And, you know, and I tell you, it's some ways, you know, having the delays, it kind of built it up. But that once you see that rocket launch, it's just your whole body feels it. It's amazing.
I think this is going to be kind of neat to people because this is larger than the Minotaurs that we've launched before. Being a nighttime launch, it's going to be highly visible. We've done some calculations, and it looked like it's going to be visible everywhere from the Carolinas over to West Virginia, all the way up to Pittsburgh, and then up into northern Maine. So,
wow.
It's going to be, if everybody has clear skies, then it's going to be visible. Yeah, so it's kind of cool.
That is very cool. I'm excited. So that's Friday, September 6th. And the launch time is 11:27 p.m.
Correct.
All righty. Now, let's talk about a couple other things that you've got going on there down at Wallops Island.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, it's just a busy time. We've got the hurricane mission we're going. If any hurricanes ever decide to form, it's been a slow period for hurricanes right now. But, I think in September is typically the peak season. So, but we have stationed here at Wallops two NASA unmanned Global Hawk aircraft that are based out of California, Dryden. So they're here and with the idea that we will send them out to investigate the hurricanes as they develop. So one aircraft flies around the storm to look at the environment, that helps feed that storm and learning, understanding, how do storms develop? What's the intensity driver? How come some, become hurricane fives and some don't? So, and then we have another one that flies over the hurricane itself, the eye of the hurricane. So it's really getting data on the interior of the hurricane system. And so with these two aircraft, they can fly 24 hours at a time. They can pick up the hurricanes, far out into the Atlantic, and basically we'll be able to follow them in towards the United States, and hopefully they'll veer off, and we'll get some good data as to understanding the dynamics and the developments of hurricanes.
So these Global Hawk, these are unmanned aircraft. They will be launched when you see a storm brewing.
Correct. Yeah, the scientists, with all their data they get from the satellites and things, they know when basically the waves are coming off the coast of Africa, off the Saharan Desert, and so they're watching the storms over the Sahara and trying to estimate when these things may start to develop and go in, and then once they see some movement out in the Atlantic and some things, they'll make a decision as to whether or not they'll fly out there and start getting data.
Interesting, and especially now with some of these hurricanes being so severe, it's just great to get this information.
Yeah, I mean, over the years, I mean, they've gotten a little bit better. They've gotten a whole lot better, actually, at determining, the direction of hurricanes.
Yes, yeah.
But as one of the scientists from the Goddard Space Flight Center, the main scientist said, we really don't understand, what drives the intensity of the hurricane and its development. So this project, which is a three-year project, they were here last year and they'll be here again next year, is to help understand that, to look at what they call the Saharan dust layer and this dust that comes off the Saharan Desert and gets into the atmosphere over the Atlantic and what role it may or may not play in the development of hurricanes. And so so this is just one piece of the puzzle that they're trying to look at.
Keith, we all remember Sandy, and especially for us down there on the eastern shore of Virginia, I was living on Chincoteague at the time, and you are so right. It was amazing to me at how they can kind of pinpoint exactly where Sandy was going to go, because for a while, it was looking like it might hit Chincoteague head on. and, you know, just veered up north. But it was really astounding to see how they could just track this thing and be so close to point.
Right. Yeah, I mean, they were pretty right on.
Yeah, they were.
Yeah. So it's kind of interesting that the science and things that they and the tools and technology that they used for tracking the understanding more about the hurricanes and where they're going. So,
okay. And now, moving on, you have two more rocket launches coming up this fall, besides the one September 6th.
Possibly, yeah. We have
possibly. I like
possibly
that.
Three actually. we have the Antares next launch, which is carrying its Cygnus cargo carrier to the International Space Station. So, this time it will carry the Cygnus and will release it in space, and then it will eventually fly to the space station, where they'll grapple it with the arm and dock it to the space station, and it will have some supplies on it. So it's mainly just to check out the process. And so right now we're looking at that launch will be 10 to 11 days or so after the LADEE mission.
Oh, my gosh.
So they're busy, you know, getting their rocket ready. Orbital is. And so so we have that one. And then we turn around in November, early November. We have another Minotaur launch. It's a smaller rocket. It's a Minotaur 1. It will be carrying Department of Defense ORS-3 satellite. This is a technology development satellite that they're flying, and so we're looking at that in the evening sometime early November. And then there's always the possibility, depending on, you know, how things line up in the schedules, that, you know, Antares, if everything goes right with its next launch, they could have another launch as early as December.
Oh, my goodness.
So, and that would be a full load of supplies going to the space station. So, on the launch range, it's extremely busy. And then we're also, right now, we have a balloon camp, science balloon campaign going on at Fort Sumner, where we have as many as 10 balloons that we're launching that are, you know, flying science experiments or are doing balloon technology development. So, and then we also have our own aircraft. So our own aircraft, we're getting ready to fly, leaves next week. It goes to Houston, where it will be for the remainder of September, helping scientists understand more about atmospheric pollutants and how we can study those from space. And then we have another aircraft that leaves shortly after that and is going to Greenland, that will be looking at the vegetation and things in the Greenland island. So extremely busy time.
Well, Keith, you keep at it. Boy, you're doing a great job. And I just want to thank you for, hanging out with us today.
Oh, enjoyed it.
And it's always great talking to you. And I look forward to seeing you on September 6th.
Good seeing you.
All right. You have a great day, Keith.
You too.
And that concludes today's Wallops and Assateague Islands Report. We've been speaking with Keith Kohler. He's Public Relations Specialist at NASA Wallops Island. Have a great day.
This has been the Wallops and Assateague Island Report, made possible by Orbital Science Corporation, innovation you can count on, and Midway Chevy, Cadillac, Buick, and Toyota of Pocomoke. See how Midway makes the difference.